Good morning. This is Neil Strauser with the CBS World News Roundup. Egyptian Vice President Mubarak goes to the White House this morning to deliver a message to President Carter from President Sadat. There was considerable feeling the immediate future, at least, of the peace talks may rest on the contents of that message. Bernard Kalb sets the stage.
According to Cairo reports, Sadat is said to have taken the position that Egypt cannot accept a peace treaty with Israel unless Israel is ready to relinquish the Gaza as well as the Sinai. Details have not been made public, hence widespread confusion. But there's speculation that Sadat may now be placing a higher priority on negotiating action on Gaza than on the West Bank, perhaps because Gaza Palestinians are apparently ready to negotiate, not so West Bank Palestinians. In any case, President Carter will get the full story when he meets this morning with the Egyptian vice president. Meantime, suspense escalates while the peace process itself seems in a state of suspension. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
Israeli newspapers say the Egyptian vice president will meet also today with Israel's defense minister, Ezra Weizman. Then Weizman will fly home to join in the Israeli cabinet debate, which has been adjourned until the nature of the Egyptian proposals could be determined. Dan Raviv has the current view from Jerusalem.
Mubarak's meeting with President Carter is viewed here as critical for clarifying recent changes in Egypt's negotiating position, if indeed there have been changes. Sources in the foreign ministry here say Egypt is standing firm in its demand for an explicit linkage between the peace treaty with Israel and the setting up of Palestinian Arab autonomy in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. But the Israelis also believe that Egypt is asking for even more in the Gaza Strip, some Egyptian police presence or other Egyptian role in establishing the autonomy there. Most Israeli officials are concerned that Egypt may be trying to regain the control of Gaza it had from 1948 to 1967. Several officials here say Egypt may be raising new demands as a way of breaking off the negotiations. On the other hand, one source here said Israel would be better off if Egypt took a direct role in setting up autonomy for Gaza because the local Palestinians might be more cooperative. Until it's clear what the Egyptians are demanding, officials here are unwilling to give any public reaction. Dan Raviv for CBS News, Jerusalem.
President Carter, in the meantime, continues to show his impatience with the Middle East peace progress. In an interview published this morning in the Los Angeles Times, Mr. Carter says he believes that part of the problem is that neither Israel nor Egypt has lived up to a Camp David agreement, that the two nations would avoid making unilateral statements to the press during the peace talks. The death toll is still uncertain in the crash of that chartered Icelandic airliner on Sri Lanka, the former Ceylon. Authorities say about 200 of the Indonesian pilgrims on the way home from Mecca died when the plane crashed short of the airfield runway in rainy weather. About 50 people, including some of the plane's crew, survived, but many with critical injuries. 4 years ago, 194 Indonesian pilgrims were killed in a similar crash near the same airfield. Warplanes, late model MiG-23s sent to Cuba, are causing concern and some bafflement in Washington today. Marvin Kalb reports.
So far as is known, the Russians have shipped about a dozen sophisticated MiG-23 planes to Cuba, and early intelligence reports suggest they may be equipped to deliver nuclear warheads, though this is not absolutely certain. They have a maximum range of 1,200 miles, and on a one-way kamikaze-type mission, they could reach a number of important American cities, including Washington. By providing these planes to Cuba, the Russians may be in violation of the 1962 understanding that ended the Cuban Missile Crisis. That understanding, in part, barred Soviet offensive weapons from Cuba. But the problem is clearly more political than military. If Russia wanted to attack the U.S., she wouldn't be relying on a dozen planes based in Cuba. She has 2,500 long-range missiles and planes to do that, all ready to go. So officials here are frankly baffled about Soviet intentions on this and Cuban plans, but either way, they are concerned that if the U.S. seems to be letting the Russians get away with this, the effect may be to build up congressional opposition to another strategic arms agreement with Russia. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
A dozen U.S. senators are now visiting in Moscow, and so far as they are concerned, they find the Russians not doing very well in building Senate goodwill for approval of an arms accord. Bernard Redmont has more.
The 12 senators have made no effort to conceal the differences that have arisen with the Soviets in the talks here. One of the group, Senator Henry Bellman, an Oklahoma Republican, said they never seemed to be able to agree on anything. Bellman said that the Soviets claimed they're not acting aggressively in Africa, the Middle East, and elsewhere, and that the Americans presented them with evidence to the contrary. The chairman of the group, Senator Abraham Ribicoff, a Connecticut Democrat, told the Russians that senators would be linking their votes on ratifying a strategic arms limitation treaty to Soviet policies on other issues, such as human rights, Jewish emigration, Africa, and the Middle East. The delegation also clashed with the Soviets on a reported Soviet military buildup in Central Europe. One of the Supreme Soviet leaders, Boris Ponomarev, expressed alarm over growing U.S. ties with China. Ponomarev said U.S. and Western military sales to China could lead to another world war. Bernard Redmont, CBS News, Moscow.
The dollar climbed again today on the European and Tokyo money markets, pushed along by the latest report on trade from the Japanese government. The report said that Japan's trade surplus with the rest of the world, a major factor in the dollar's decline, was more than halved last month. In Washington, Federal Reserve Board Chairman G. William Miller is scheduled to testify before the Senate Banking Committee today. Undoubtedly, he will be asked about the impact on the U.S. economy of the administration's and the Fed's tight money, save the dollar program. The war that Radio Uganda declared at an end 2 days ago apparently is not. And in fact, Tanzania claims to be seizing the opportunity to severely maul the forces that Idi Amin is trying to pull out of Tanzanian territory. Mike Lee in Nairobi has the latest chapter.
With Tanzanian sources insisting the border war with Uganda is continuing, Ugandan President Idi Amin has accused the Tanzanians of not wanting peace. In a message relayed this morning by government-controlled Radio Uganda, Amin unleashed some fairly typical pungent, sweet, and sour rhetoric. Amin said he's ready to fly to Dar es Salaam on short notice to confer with Tanzanian leader Nyerere, and said Amin, after peace, he's ready to fight side by side with Nyerere for the liberation of Southern Africa. However, this olive branch had its thorns. In the same message, Amin described Nyerere as a sophisticated hypocrite, a deaf statesman, and a coward general commanding his troops from behind the front lines and hiring mercenaries, despite what Amin described as a crippling effect on the Tanzanian economy. Tanzanian sources have let it be known that Amin should be taught a lesson for his border invasion of 17 days ago. There's no confirmation of Uganda's declared withdrawal, and indications are that many Tanzanians are in favor of a protracted war in hopes Amin's troubled regime will tumble from within. Mike Lee, CBS News, Nairobi.
Rhodesia's biracial government met again today to debate postponement of the scheduled December 31st date for transfer to majority rule, with Prime Minister Ian Smith repeating arguments that the time is too short to prepare for the transition. In the meantime, Robert Mugabe's Black Guerrilla Organization, in a broadcast from Mozambique, named more than 50 Rhodesian blacks now cooperating with the right biracial government and said they will be shot unless they renounce the internal settlement under which the interim government was formed. Those 2,500 Vietnamese refugees waiting off Malaysia on a crowded ship may at last have found a home. Malaysia is now considering offers from France and from Canada to take some or all of the refugees. It is the second annual Great American Smokeout today. Under the sponsorship of the American Cancer Society, in all but one state, American smokers are being urged to put down that cigarette for one day. And the hope is that more smokeless days will follow. Bruce Hall has more.
The Cancer Society says that the first smokeless Thursday last year, as many as 2 million people stopped smoking for a period of about 2 months. The Cancer Society says the Smokeless Thursday program is one of their most successful events. The only state where the campaign will not be pushed is in North Carolina, where most of the tobacco is produced and cigarettes manufactured. The North Carolina Division of the American Cancer Society is ignoring the program because state cancer officials say it is a direct attack on the tobacco industry. And the North Carolina state officials say their bylaws prohibit them from taking part in any attack on the powerful tobacco industry. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Raleigh, North Carolina.
A second look today at a study which found a connection between estrogen and uterine cancer. Two Yale University researchers say the original study was based on inaccurate research with a built-in bias toward finding cancer. In their own studies, they say they find little evidence of a cancer risk in use of the estrogen, which is often prescribed to relieve the ills of menopause.